You're listening to a 3CR podcast recorded in the 3CR Community Radio Studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you like what you hear, please consider donating or subscribing so we can keep bringing you more independent community content. For more information, go to 3cr.org.au.
The 3CR Gardening Show is coming to you today from the Woi Wurrung Nation. We acknowledge the Wurundjeri people as the traditional owners of this land. We recognise the practices of care and cultivation of the land and waters by the First Peoples and pay our respects to their elders past and present. Wherever you are and wherever you garden, we encourage you to know whose land you're on.
Good morning, folks. Welcome to the 3CR Garden Show. My name's John Arnott. This is my first hosting for the year. So you can't say Happy New Year, but you can say Happy Lunar New Year, because I think that was a couple of days ago or thereabouts. Welcome to another 3CR Garden Show. I'm joined by a couple of 3CR Garden Show stalwarts this morning. In the studio, we have Penny Woodward, useful and edible plant guru, I think we'll call you, author. Welcome, Penny. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
That's good. Yes. Excellent. And we're also joined by Evan Golke from Ochre Landscapes.
That's right. Morning, John.
How are you doing?
Morning,
thanks, Penny. Thanks both for coming in this morning.
That's a pleasure.
There was a couple of, it's looking promising for some rain later on today, but there were a couple of drops on the windscreen on the car coming in, so that's looking, it's looking nice and promising.
Yeah, absolutely fabulous. I hope we get 20 mil.
Well,
gently. Gently. 20 mil of gentle rain.
There is talk of 25 to 50.
Mm. And over the next few days, not just all today, so which would be fantastic.
Would not our gardens, they would be so grateful for a bit of rainfall.
Yes.
We've got producing the show this morning, we've got Jacob and Labana in the control room. There's been a slight change in some of the back of house tech, so we'll be testing that today. I think the garden show are the sort of the test case on some of this new technology. So good luck, Jacob and Labana, in the producer's room, and thanks for coming in this morning. We've got a terrific show lined up. It's the usual mix of panel chat. We'll open up the lines for visitor questions and text messages. But we'll also be reaching out to Kylie Soans, who's been project managing the City of Melbourne's Floral Emblem Project. Which will be a lot of fun. Jam-packed show, lots of community announcements. It seems like we're only 2 weeks out from autumn, and autumn is outdoor garden festival time. So we've got a whole bunch of community announcements. We'll open up the lines, and in the studio we have Penny and Evan. Thanks again for coming in. Given it's our first show for 2026, I just wouldn't mind. I'm sure the listeners would be really interested to hear what's going on in your own garden. So I'll start with you, Penny. What you've been doing in your garden?
Okay.
And your garden is in Somers?
Correct.
Beautiful.
Yeah, not far from the sea. So you need to take that into account.
Not far from Westernport.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
What you been doing, Pen?
Not a lot, I have to say.
Okay.
Mainly,
no, that's fair
but
enough.
It's been a deliberate decision because it's so dry.
So
I have just been keeping my plants alive, and I don't know about other gardeners, but we've just had no rain, and the few drops that we have had haven't gone into the soil. They just sit on the surface because it hasn't been enough.
Are you on grey sand? No.
No, we're on clay.
You're on clay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a big bank of clay in that bit. And, you know, when it dries out, it stays dry until you get really, really decent rain. So I do some hand watering, some drip watering. One day I just thought, oh, God, I can't stand this dryness because all the leaves and everything were so dry. I found an old great big
Oh, the old knocker. The old school knocker.
And I managed to get it working and I put it on and it just, I moved it around the garden just for a couple of hours and I just felt so much better. But I sort of felt really guilty at this.
They are not the most water efficient bit of irrigation technology.
But my garden loved it.
It would have cooled the air as well.
It did. It was extraordinary. So, that's my answer to that question. I'm hoping after this rain that I'll be able to get stuck back into the garden again and do some planting. And
Does your garden have a style?
Mess.
Okay, so it's a messy garden.
Yes.
Organised chaos.
That's probably not a nice But it's, I mean, at one point we had massive growth. And so it's like walking through tunnels because I deliberately haven't pulled things out because I was trying not to create bare spaces and that sort of thing. But I have got the weeds under control. So that's the main thing I've been concentrating
on. And normal house block size, bigger than that?
It's a little bit bigger, but, yeah, pretty close to normal. Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. Town water? You're on town water?
Tank and town, but we've run out of tanks, so we're on town water.
Well, it's not surprising because it really has been very, very dry.
Yeah.
Evan, do you remember when you were at the zoo, because we worked at the zoo
a million years ago.
You were involved in sort of moving along those knocker sprays on the back lawns? Was that a task?
Yes, that was a thing. Yeah, because and very water inefficient, as you say. But beautiful, and kids love it, that running through those sprays.
Yes. Just that sound of the click, click, click.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's embedded.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've got a couple of gardens. Well, what are you doing in your gardens?
Yeah, so like Penny, not a lot. I actually like this kind of year because I do like sailing. So summer, you know, not a lot of weeds grow when it's dry. Yeah. So I'm not completely sort of out of that. You know, it's sailing season. It is a little bit. I don't tend to water much at all in the garden. So our Guy's Hill garden is quite big.
Yeah.
I'm
finding it hard to position Guy's Hill, Gippsland.
Upper Beaconsfield.
So Western Gippsland.
Yeah. Just out of Melbourne, really. Yeah. Berwick. And it is exceptionally dry. A lot of leaf drop. I'm sort of starting, and I'll start this week, because it is getting cooler. Seems a bit weird. The days are getting shorter, I should say. So our mornings are getting cooler, which is a really good sign. So it's now a time that I'll start preparing our veggie gardens. So for garlic, for example, and so on, start preparing those beds. I don't actually grow a lot of stuff through the summer for eating.
Okay.
Leafy things.
I've got some tomatoes
that my dad bred and grew that the family all have now, and I grow them just to keep them going.
He bred them?
Well, yeah, because he had them for so very long.
Yeah.
And they're a sort of a beefsteak tomato, so they're very big, so you need a lot of sun. And we're sort of on the southeast side of the ridge.
Yeah.
So it's really, anything summery is a bit hard for us to grow unless we have an extended hot summer. So the summer was very late this year coming. It was so wet through October, November. And so our tomatoes and so on just didn't really get going. So I don't think we've had a few fruit, but not very much. So I've given up growing things like eggplant and capsicums and things like that. And I really just concentrate on then getting the soil right coming into the late summer to then start planting. So I'll plant things through the summer like leeks, because you can sort of plant them all the time, and carrots.
Yep.
If you protect the seed, I put old palings over the top of the seed to keep them moist as they come up.
Okay.
And lettuce, things like that. And we've always got things like silver beet that you grow all year round, and beetroot and things like that. But you know, I think the best season is coming for us. And like Penny, we're on tank water as well as other water. But our tank water, which is nearly 50,000 litres, only gets used on the veggies.
Okay.
And we have another 40,000 litres, which is for fire use.
Yeah, sure.
That will get pumped up in the next couple of weeks to the other tanks as soon as we feel like the fire threat is gone.
So when you say fire, are you proximate to native vegetation?
We are. So we're sort of due sort of south, I guess, of Critchley Parker Reserve, which sort of goes through to Harkaway.
Yeah.
So if a fire starts up in, say, Birdsland or wherever, up around Belgrave way, and comes down the Cardinia Creek, which is what happened in Ash Wednesday, it comes all the way down there. That then, when you get the wind change, will come across us, which nearly happened in Ash Wednesday where we are. So it is important. In Black Saturday, we very nearly had a fire because somebody was angle grinding in Narre Warren North.
On a 42-degree day.
So it is a thing. You got to keep that water available. And talking, you know, batteries and solar and so on, that's been a game changer for fire use for us because we now have batteries. And so I used to have a generator on the electric pump, which is petrol-driven, which can evaporate in heat.
Yeah.
So now we have batteries. So we can run, you know, a fire pump, but also the water out of the existing tanks that goes around the house. And I actually tested all the house eave a little while ago, and it's a mist. And like you were saying, it cooled the garden. Like walking around, it was just a pleasure because it put so much sort of mist into the air.
Yeah.
Because it is just so very, very dry. But, you know, it's got its pros and cons.
One of the things I've really noticed in walking around Summers, and I know you're familiar with Summers too, is how much bark has been lost off all the eucalypts.
Sure.
All the eucalypts have all shed their bark, and there is bark on the ground in piles around all of them, and that's a huge fire risk. You know, you also don't want to clear it all up because it's also there for all the insects and the everything else.
Yeah, so it's a real balance.
Finding
isn't it?
That balance is really hard.
Yeah.
But I've never seen so much bark on the ground as there is this year.
Yeah, we were just commenting on that the other day because we've got quite a big lemon scented gum and it has literally shed everything this year.
Yeah.
Which it looks amazing.
And the bark looks incredible. Some of the Angophoras.
Oh.
Just with the bright pink barks, it's beautiful.
There's an Angophora on the driveway into Coolart on the right side that has its branches all the way down to the ground. That tree looks extraordinary at the moment.
Yeah.
There's a fellow that does some 3CR shows by the name of Stephen Wells, and he was on the show late last year, and he was talking about a maculata, and actually a friend of his writing a message onto the bark, almost purging it at the end of the summer season. I thought that was one of that. It really stuck with me as something, you know, quite a beautiful thing to do, just sort of maybe just write down some of your thoughts, some of your concerns, some of the stuff that happens during the year.
Something that will wash off.
Something that will wash off.
You're not etching it into the trunk.
No. I think you mentioned something about a Sharpie or something like that anyway. But, those deciduous bark, eucalypts and corymbias, they are so beautiful at the moment.
I think it's an interesting thing about gardening too, because my garden is a mix of natives and exotics.
Yeah, I was going to ask, do you have a style?
Just don't blink. You know, they're just soldiering on, and so many of the exotics had dropped 80% of their leaves and so on, which I don't tend to water them. I just hope they come back.
Yeah.
It is incredible how, you know, if you go for those native plants, and especially indigenous ones, they just hang in there.
Yeah. So you're a mix of native plants, exotic plants, that sort of thing. Yeah.
Me too.
As well, Penny?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm planting more and more natives and particularly indigenous, so locally indigenous plants.
Yeah. So am I.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Well, thank you. Look, in my garden, I'm on grey coastal sand, so it's a similar sort of thing to you, Evan. It's just wait until it starts raining again. So, you know, the autumn break and, you know, I'll get in and do some planting and, but we're struggling at this time of the year, incredibly dry, sandy soils.
I just find it's just nice time off out of the garden. So
I miss it.
You're listening to the 3CR Garden Show. My name's John Arnott, joined today by Penny Woodward, Evan Gorky from Ochre Landscapes. We'd love to invite visitors to jump in on any of the conversations that we're having this morning. We do have a bunch of community announcements, so I might just hold that back for another 15 minutes or so. Sunday morning sleeper renewers, if they have any questions, you can always post questions to the 3CR email, which is 3cr.gardening@gmail.com. Community events. I mentioned before we're only a couple of weeks away from autumn. And, you know, autumn is the sort of... So we're right on the cusp of the the autumn event season. So a whole bunch of community announcements have come in, so buckle up for the next 10 minutes or so, and I'll mention a few of these community announcements and events which are happening over the next couple of weeks in and around Melbourne. Open Gardens Victoria, they're hosting their annual lecture program. So they have a dedicated lecture program once a year. The theme for this year's lecture program is talking garden design, designing gardens with plants at heart. The blurb here is, join us for an inspiring evening at Collingwood Yards with three acclaimed landscape designers, Kathleen Murphy, Phoebe Coyant, and the discussion being facilitated by Natasha Morgan. A thoughtful conversation about how gardens are made when plants sit at the centre of the design process, which I thought was really nice language, you know, not having plants as subordinate to the design elements, having plants sit as central to the design process. And different approaches from these three landscape architects and garden designers. So the lecture series is called Talking Garden Design, Designing with Gardens at the Heart of Your Garden, Thursday the 5th of March 2026 at the Collingwood Yards, which is 35 Johnson Street, Collingwood. It is arrived by 5:30 to be seated in time for the event to start at 6. Tickets are $55 via Try Booking. So that sounds like a lovely evening with some highly qualified and inspirational landscape designers. Open Gardens are also thrilled to announce a rescheduling of the Barwithian Garden, which will be held on March the 7th and March the 8th. The Barwithian Garden, it's a natural wild perennial-based garden which covers about 3 acres on the Broken River near Mansfield in northeast Victoria. I think they were planning to do this event earlier or late last year, and there was some fire weather and they needed to reschedule it. So that's been held over to March the 7th and the 8th. A bit of a bonus for that particular event is antique perennials will be selling. They'll have a stall there and they'll be selling their range of perennials, many of which are featured in the Barwithian Gardens. Coffee cart selling hot, cold drinks and snacks as per usual. Entrance to the Barwithian Garden as a part of OGV event is $10 for adults and $6 for students. And again, tickets available via Try Booking. The Friends of the Cranbourne Gardens, a place very close to my heart, have their autumn plant sale on the 14th and 15th of March 2026 between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. The plant sale is held in the Australian Garden at the kiosk at the northern end of the Australian Garden site. It's a lovely opportunity to take some of the Australian Garden home with you. All of the plants, or the majority of the plants which are offered for sale by the Friends of the Cranbourne Gardens, are things that are of the Australian Garden. So Australian Garden fanciers, native plant folks, get along to the Friends of the Cranbourne Gardens plant sale on Saturday the 14th and Sunday the 15th of March. 10 a.m. start, 4 p.m. close. There's a festival that Penny mentioned to me earlier. It's the Womanjaka Festival, which is being held on Saturday the 14th of March, 10 till 5, down at the Emu Plains Reserve, Coolart Road, Balnarring. I think it's in support of the local primary school, but it's an incredible program with music and a whole bunch of cultural events. The Womanjaka Festival, family-friendly community festival, held on the 14th of March 2026. And essentially the theme of that one is it's got a sort of a caring for country message. So for those interested in a bit of cultural immersion, it's the Womanjaka Festival, Saturday 14th of March 2026, down in Balnarring. Back on the native plant theme, the Australian Plant Society Yarra Yarra are holding their native plant and book sale. their autumn sale. That's on Saturday the 28th of March, 9:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. That's held at the Eltham Community and Reception Centre, 801 Main Road, Eltham. There's some fantastic nurseries that have got some stalls at the Native Plant and Book Sale. Goldfields Revegetation Nursery, Ironstone Park Nursery, Weeping Grevillea Nursery and Ian Evans Native Plant Royalty also has a stall there. So that's Saturday, 28th of March at the Eltham Community and Reception Centre. Australian Plant Society Yarra Yarra Group. I'm going to throw to Penny because the South Gippsland Garlic Festival, which was formerly the Menian Garlic Festival, is that right? That's on next weekend, I
next
believe.
Next Saturday.
Yeah.
Yep, yep. So the South Gippsland Garlic Festival is in Coonawarra again this year. So if you're coming from Melbourne, it's a bit closer for you. And there's so many things happening. So it's the biggest celebration of Australian garlic in Australia. It's a $15 entry. It runs from 9 till 5. And there are speakers, including me. I'm speaking at 9:30. There's also a panel of experts at 2 o'clock that I'll be on. But apart from that, I'll just be on my stand answering questions and selling the last of my garlic books. But there's also music. There's a festival kitchen where four different chefs during the day will be explaining how to cook with various different garlics. There's, I think I counted 14 different garlic sellers. So
okay.
They've managed to, it's been a better year for garlic this year, so they've managed to rope in more, because it's always slightly the end of the garlic season.
Okay.
So not everyone has garlic available. But if you want to see some different garlics, and I would suggest you come in the morning rather than the afternoon if you want to buy garlic.
Up.
Well, last year they ran out by about 2 o'clock.
Oh,
so,
really? Okay.
Yeah, but as I said, it's a much better year this year and they've got more stands. So hopefully it will last for longer. But even if you can't get your garlic, you can talk to people and you can find out other sources of garlic. And, you know, the Australian Garlic Industry Association has a terrific marketplace on their site so that they you can buy through them from garlic growers all over Australia. So, you know, that's a really good place to go if you're looking to buy garlic and you can't make it to the festival. There's the kitchen, there's the talks, there's all the stands, there's a food and produce precinct, there's a craft and homewares precinct, so it's not just garlic. So if you're dragging your family along, there's lots of stuff for kids as well. You know, it's not all about garlic, but there is an awful lot of garlic happening.
So we went last year, Penny, and it was fantastic.
Yeah.
And we heard your talk.
Oh, did you?
Which was excellent. Okay. As
excellent.
Well.
Very good. So.
Yeah, it was really good, really informative. So.
We might do if we've got time, we might do a bit of a garlic masterclass later in the show.
Sure.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Happy to do that. Anyway, look, I think it's a really good event. It's not that far from Melbourne. Anyone who's in Gippsland will be able to come, and every time I mention it to someone, they say, oh, yeah, we were coming anyway. So, you know,
excellent.
I think it could be quite busy. So yes, that's the garlic festival.
And that's at Coonawarra.
Coonawarra, yeah.
Is Coonawarra a little foodie town?
It is really good for food.
Yeah.
It has some really nice things happening in Coonawarra.
There's a few of those South Gippsland, Western Gippsland towns which are really hitting their straps.
Yes.
Lang Lang?
Yeah, yeah. There's some interesting, lots of interesting things happening in Gippsland.
Fish Creek?
Yes.
Yeah, there's some lovely little towns.
The bike trail along there has helped, I think, as well, because there's a car park at Coonawarra and a toilet, so people will park there and start their ride or whatever. Mm.
Yeah.
Coonawarra is a fabulous
little
spot.
It's a lovely
spot.
Little town, isn't it?
Mm.
Conwack?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, there's some lovely...
And when you get down to the coast, there's, you know, Kilcunda and amazing places.
Inverloch, Tarwin.
All of those. Indeed.
Magic Beach.
Yes. Well, the Alison Lester Studio.
All the Alison Lester Studio.
Oh, true enough.
Yeah, which is wonderful.
It is. It's beautiful, beautiful country.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine that those rolling green hills, so characteristic of South Gippsland, actually supported the tallest flowering plants on planet Earth. Back in the 1800s before the Great Fires and stuff like that. Mountain ash and alpine ash.
Yeah.
Extraordinary.
See remnant stumps in Tarrabulga National Park.
You do. I think there was one tree just out of, I can't think of the town now, but it might have been, I can't recall the town. But it
Is
was
it Powell it was, Town? Or?
No, it wasn't Powell Town, but it was nearby.
Yeah.
They measured a tree after they had felled it.
Oh, yeah, great.
At 138 metres.
Yeah, amazing.
138 metre.
Amazing, yeah.
Extraordinary. Mm. So there are a couple more community announcements, and then we'll get stuck into a couple of things. The Herb and Chili Festival is on again Sunday the 15th of March. That's at 125 Quail Road, Wandon. A little bit like the Garlic Festival. It's a festival all around the chili in this instance. Mm. So it's a bit of a foodie festival. 125 Quail Road, Wandon. You can buy tickets at the event, but you can also pre-purchase tickets at Try Booking. Great supporters of the show, the Ferny Creek Horticulture Society, and on the 18th of April, so that's a little way out, Saturday the 18th and Sunday the 19th of April, it's the Plant Collectors Expo and Flower Show. So they've combined a couple of their events into one. It's a little bit like a mini Mifkus in that there are over 40 stallholders that are presenting their wares. Lots of 3CR presenters are there selling their wares. So that's on Saturday the 18th and Sunday the 19th of April. It is at 100 Hilton Road, Sassafras, in the lovely Dandong Ranges. It's $9 for adult, and kids under 18 are free. But for three lucky 3CR listeners, we've actually got some free passes to the Plant Collectors Expo and Flower Show, 18th and 19th of April. So if you are interested in picking up three double passes, give us a call on 9419 0155, and you could snap up a couple of passes to the Plant Collectors Expo and Flower Show. So there's a bit on out there in garden world.
Yeah,
I mean, autumn is it's like you, Evan. You're sort of going to re-engage with your garden in autumn. Mm. I think there's two kind of peaks in there. There's the autumn peak and the spring peak.
Mm.
And apparently after the grand final, all the nursery and garden centres say that that's their busiest day of the year, because people wake up the Saturday after the grand final and say, there's no footy, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
So it's get out into the nursery.
I feel like the busiest time of year for me is coming up in the garden, after it's sat for a while, and just preparing everything, especially veggies, and even pruning the apples back. Start that soon. And I've got some ginkgos in a group that I'm going to start pruning. And, again, just waiting for that heat to go and then start pruning them back, because they're in a cluster, and so ultimately I'm not going to let them get, 30 metres tall.
So pruning a ginkgo...
Yeah,
ginkgos.
Yeah. They do it. If you drive around Tokyo or wherever, you'll see it quite regularly. Street trees. They
pollard them.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. Yeah. They do. Yep. So and they can look really fabulous. Really structured and interesting in the winter as well as through the summer. So I went with seed grown ones, knowing that I might get a few fruit
and a bit of variation.
Yeah. I get great variation in when the colour comes. So there's 14 of them in this group, and I just think it's really nice having seed growing ones. Now I've got four or five that are fruit, but every year so far, somebody's come in and eaten them.
Somebody, so, yeah. As in some critter.
Yeah, the last, I think it's a dollar bird.
Okay.
A dollar bird.
Yeah.
I have not heard of a dollar bird.
I hadn't heard of it either, but I've been searching and looking, and I saw this green bird in there a few weeks ago, maybe 4 weeks ago.
So what parts are they eating?
They're eating the fruit.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, and just drop the seed. So so we get a few seedlings come up from that.
Yeah, okay.
But the stinky bit, which smells like vomit,
it's the flesh around
is the flesh seed. Around the outside. And yeah. So at first I thought it might be fruit bats because we were getting fruit bats in our fig tree.
Okay.
For a few years, but no, I'm not sure that it is. I think it's a bird. So it could be currawongs as well. But having seen
not possums. That bird,
Could be possums, yeah. But we don't get a lot of possum damage at our place.
Okay.
I think there's enough bush around. You're rolling your eyes.
Well, just in this dry weather, we've had so much possum damage because they're just going after everything that's got moisture in it.
Yeah.
And I don't blame them, but, you know, I'd like some fruit.
So you're leaving water out for the possums?
I do. I leave water out for everything at different levels and in different spots. And
nice.
Always.
Yeah. Yeah, I came across a ringtail possum at the base of a cherry tree right in the middle of that hot spell.
Yeah.
It was just sitting at the base right next to our shed at the base of the tree, and it just looked a bit bedraggled. And so I got the hose and I sprayed the canopy of the tree from a distance, and it ran down the trunk. And my daughter took a video of this little possum licking the water off the trunk. And then he disappeared.
Yeah, that was a nice thing.
So it was pretty cool. Yeah. And probably up to eat the leaves of the tree. But that's okay. I don't bother about that. Mm. If they kill it, that's it, I guess.
Yeah.
Go with something else.
Yeah.
So you're going to hold them to a certain height, your ginkgos?
Yes, I am going to do that. Yeah. I've been debating it for years because, of course, once you start, you have to keep going.
Yep.
But because it's in a sort of an ellipse-shaped bed with a path around the outside on both sides, if I don't start pruning them back, in the very long term, there'll be no low foliage.
Okay.
It'll all get shaded out because you have to cut it to be able to walk past them.
Yep.
And they're close to the house. It's like a hedge. If you prune the bottom of the face of a hedge and continue to do that and don't prune the top as much as you should, it's a very common thing for people to do. So hedges always grow more vigorously towards in the top half.
Yeah, sure.
And so people will sort of run over with their hedge shears and take an inch off everywhere. But over time, the top just gets wider and wider and wider and you shade out the bottom.
Gotcha.
It's really important to cut things like a pyramid.
Okay.
On a decent slope, even hedges, and people don't notice it.
So not an exaggerated pyramid, but a fair bit of angle. A
decent amount of angle. Okay. Yeah, probably 10 degrees.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you go to Versailles, places like that, and you look down the alleys of those massive, what are they, hornbeams or something?
Hornbeams, sure.
Yeah.
They're all on an angle. And if you see the timber structures on wheels that they drive to, or they push around to do it, they're all on angles.
Hot tip.
Yes.
There you go.
So I have to do that with the ginkgos. I have to prune them inwards. And also, of course, for the fruiting ones, you know, I don't want them to get massive because if they get massive amounts of fruit, then it's going to be a very stinky affair.
Yeah, it sure will.
Yeah.
Because they do have a particular smell. Mm,
yeah. But those trees are planted there for keeping the house cool because it stops the morning eastern sun, or beyond east really, in the summer, from barreling onto the lowest part of our house.
Sure.
So the lowest, we've got different height pitches and it's the lowest one, so it's the hottest room. And it's made a huge difference to the coolness of the house.
But it also lets the heat in winter because they've lost their leaves.
Exactly, yeah. So it works really, really well.
Yeah, okay. Mm. So as a garden designer, have you designed your garden, or is it a little bit more like you just put it together have you made it up as you've gone along, or did you have a master plan?
Both. I did do a master plan right at the beginning. I actually made a model.
You made a model?
Yeah. I had time, didn't I? and then components are sort of designed as I go along. And yeah, I guess I'm pulling back from it a little bit because I don't want to create huge amounts of work. So it's really focused around fruit trees and veggies and chickens and things like that now. So the focus has changed from when we started 20 years ago, which was more just creating a really beautiful garden. That's taken a back step for sure, because it's way more important to be planting indigenous stuff and planting vegetables and fruit trees and having, you know, chicken runs and that sort of thing. So the focus has changed in the 20 years.
It's really interesting. 20 years is not that long a period.
No.
But you're designing differently now than what you did 20 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
In response to climate.
Yeah. And just it just makes sense for people to grow their own food.
Yeah, sure.
And it's not difficult. It depends. I like the idea of having an untidy garden. You know, our orchard area is super untidy. But then there's arguments, isn't there, for bringing insects in, if you have that sort of thing.
Yes. It's taken me a long time to come up with the philosophy that justifies the way I've gardened all my life.
Nice.
Penny, you've recently written an article for the Mornington Peninsula Biosphere Reserve.
The Western Port Biosphere.
Western Port Biosphere
That's
Reserve.
Fine. We just need to get the names right.
Are there two? No.
No. This is Western Port Biosphere Reserve, which goes around the outside of Western Port Vase.
Okay.
So it includes a little bit of the Mornington side, but it doesn't include Port Phillip Bay.
Okay.
So it is just around West Port Bay, and it's a UNESCO determined biosphere, and it's really important. So I'm trying to, as we get older, we need to sort of sort out our legacy.
Yes.
So I have 30 years of articles about gardening that I've been writing, which I still own the copyright for.
Oh, good on you.
So I am just gradually giving them to the Western Port Biosphere to publish them.
Fantastic.
Online as part of their quarterly newsletters. So it's just a nice way to still be having a bit of a voice out there. And it's helping them. And I think they've realised that as part of the biosphere, they're doing some amazing research in all sorts of scientific areas, including with Cranbourne Botanic Gardens.
That's right, with the bandicoots and wildlife.
And the bandicoots and the koalas and trying to set up a koala corridor and all of that work. But all the people who live in the biosphere have gardens.
Sure.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And by doing good things in our gardens, we can actually make a difference to the environment more widely. So I'd been having this thought because we talk so often about how having solar panels has made a real difference to our renewable energy and getting our renewable energy much higher than maybe would have happened if it had just been left to government. And I think we can do the same thing in our garden. So I just wrote this article about 12 things you can do in your garden that help the environment. And it's sort of a bit orientated specifically to the biosphere.
But
it really applies everywhere. But my favourite one of the whole 12 is that you should be messy in your garden.
You should be messy. I can read this. Where are we? Where is it?
It's okay to be messy.
Number five.
Instead of sweeping up or blowing away the leaves. Oh, we love a blower.
No.
Twigs and bark. Let some accumulate in piles for birds, lizards and insects. They will provide habitat and nest building or construction materials.
There you
Absolutely.
Go.
Absolutely.
So the messy gardener.
I think that part of the messiness, I just feel really sad when I see pristine gardens because I don't think they should be. It's not like the inside of our house.
No.
You don't actually have to keep it tidy and you don't have to keep it clean and you don't have to blow everything out of the way. And, you know, one of the other things on the list is if you are changing your blowers, please change to electric blowers and mowers and because you then don't have that noise and you don't have the pollution.
Yep.
So we talk about the pollution from petrol and diesel cars, but nobody discusses the pollution from our two-stroke mowers and our two-stroke blowers. And those in inner city areas, that can have a huge effect on the air pollution. Mm. So, you know, there are things as individuals, if you're feeling really sad about the environment, there are little things that you can do. And the one I said first in the list was to put water out.
Yeah.
So I walk every morning and I'm always finding things beside the road. And a few weeks ago I found a small basin and I just picked that up and carried it home as I walked. And I've now put it in the ground underneath the tree that the koalas visit when they're coming our way to make sure that there's water there for them. And it just made me feel just that little bit better about the world.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. Mm. I mean, just the act of gardening. Yeah, we're actually, as gardeners, we're actually making a really positive contribution to a more livable suburb, town, state, country, planet, through the act of gardening. And these 12, look, I think we will in our socials point to this article.
Okay.
Because I think it actually encaptures a whole bunch of really good things. So I might just roll through the 12.
Sure.
So this was 12 things you can do in your home garden to help our biosphere. So, you know, put in brackets there, your suburb or your town. Have water in your garden that you've just mentioned. It's really interesting during that heat. And this is awful. The grey-headed flying foxes have got no way of thermoregulating. And, you know, they were succumbing left, right and centre to the heat. If there was water present, you know, that would have addressed that.
Yeah.
So have water in your garden for a whole bunch of things, including invertebrates and insects and the like. Plant a range of flowers for Australian insects and butterflies, as well as honeybees, can be a combination of native, non-native. Have pollinator plants present in the garden. Grow organically, you know, don't use pesticides that'll kill the beneficial insects and the like. Grow dense, weed killer to an absolute minimum. Don't use anything if it isn't certified organic. Plant for birds, so, you know, growing dense, prickly shrub mass can greatly benefit some of the little birds that are getting pushed out by, you know, some of the bully birds that are prolific and around the place. It's okay to be messy, that we mentioned before. Instead of sweeping and blowing, just leave things alone. It provides habitat by default. Plant trees everywhere you can. Like, again, it's that habitat. It's the complexity of habitat.
But it also cools the garden and your house.
And your house. And it makes it much more habitable. Mm. Plant some locally indigenous shrubs, trees and grasses. Have a compost heap or a worm farm. Mm. Recycle all of your kitchen waste, shredded paper and so on. Keep all of your fallen leaves. That's free mulch. You know, why would you put leaves into a green bin and have it? It seems ridiculous, but, hold on to your leaves and they're actually a resource and an asset to your garden. Storing carbon in the soil and the like. Remember that anything you put on the garden is going to end up in the drain, so try and minimise runoff. And that can include, you know, overzealous use of fertiliser. It all ends up in waterways and it all ends up in places like Western Port Bay or Port Phillip Bay or in our river courses and river systems. Change to electric mowers and grow some food.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. All great things.
It is a cracking list.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, there's things that I, you know, would, looking at it afterwards, I thought, oh, no, I should have added that and that. But sometimes you need to sort of keep it to... But, yeah, so I guess what I'm trying to say to people is if you're feeling desperate about the environment, go and have a look at the list and just do one of them.
Yeah.
And it will actually make you feel better, a little bit better.
And make small things.
And make a positive contribution.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. We were, and this is sort of along these lines of leaving things messy. This is a... I'll put a photo onto the internet, onto the 3CR page.
Please explain.
Well, that's a white-browed scrub wren. There she is.
Oh, gorgeous.
She made a nest in our peg bag while we were away over Christmas New Year. So she was aptly named Peggy. and it is made out of bits of bark. That she would have gathered, and I mean they work as groups, the scrub wrens. So they would have gathered that and built that, and if that bark wasn't laying around, then
you know, they wouldn't have that to use. So if in a pristine environment, we've found in the 20 years where we've been up there, the small bird life has increased dramatically. And I do think it's because of we've let the bush grow at the back.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more shrubs. Before it was just trees and because people had horses in there. But all those shrubs have come back.
Yeah.
So we have all that under and mid-story now. We have blue wren families every year that fledge our young ones. The kookaburras have increased dramatically. Mm. The echidnas have increased. The magpies have increased. Everything really has increased dramatically. We get all the parrots come in. So having water.
Mm.
So I have a pond that has a shallow area in it for that reason.
Yep.
And there was a year where I put a motion camera out there, a wildlife camera, and so many images of different rosellas coming in and bathing in there. It's just fabulous. Also at night, foxes coming for a drink and cats.
Yeah, sure.
Which is scary for the little birds.
The cats.
No. Mm-hmm. But, you know, having water in different places and having shallow bits of water.
Yeah, so it's not all deep. But, you must get frogs in your pond as well.
Yeah, we get frogs.
Yeah, so by having bigger areas of water, you get frogs which is precious.
We have two ponds, sort of end of the house and front of the house. And at the moment, if you're watching television, you actually have to turn it up to about 20.
Because of the noise they're making.
The frogs are just so raucous at the moment.
That's fantastic.
Because we had rain about 2 weeks ago. We had 14 mils.
We didn't get
you
that.
You missed it. Yeah. And as soon as that rain came, they're off. And last weekend, I think we had, or the weekend before, we had 10 mils as well. So we've had 24.
That's good.
As opposed to January, where we had 4.5.
Yeah, sure.
So it was, the frogs know, and they're off and they're going.
Do you know what species of frog you have?
We have I may get this right, the green-striped marsh frog.
Okay.
We have the common froglet. Which I find a bit depressing. Mm. And it's not even a frog. It's like Pluto.
Poor old Pluto.
And we have a bobok.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
Pobblebonk.
Pobblebonk. Yeah, we have those guys as well. And they just echo through the place.
Yeah, great.
So we have three. The green-striped marsh frog, you've got to be really careful around the veggie garden where I've got grass. Mm-hmm. I leave it longer, and you have to be careful when you're brush cutting that grass because they tend to hang in there.
Yeah.
They sit in there, and they're so camouflaged.
So in the lawn?
Yeah, yeah, in such. The grassy area because that's part of the vegetable garden. So it gets irrigated in the middle of the day just for 5 minutes to get seed up and that sort of thing. So it's cool in there, and the grass grows reasonably in there.
Okay, and how are you dealing with things like noisy miners and Indian miners? Do you have those in the garden?
Yeah, that's really interesting. We do get noisy miners, but not half as many as you get at summers.
Mm-hmm.
And I
different
I,
habitat.
I you could correct me here, but I reckon it's because a lot of people in beach areas tend to grow big, flowering grevilleas and callistemons and those things rather than what indigenous stuff we have around Upper Beaconsfield, which is tiny flowering grevilleas and so on, which really favour the eastern spinebills and the New Holland honey eaters, whereas I feel like down at Summers it's quite different, is it?
I'm not sure. I think it depends. We don't get noisy miners in my garden because it's so dense.
Right.
They like the open spaces. So if you've got a big tree and a few shrubs, that's where you get the noisy miners.
Yeah, okay.
And I agree, there's a lot of them in summers. Never see them in my garden.
So the strategy for dealing with the miners is have more shrub mass?
Yes, and, absolutely. Someone may disagree with me, but that's what I found in my garden. And we do get Indian miners and we get them, but I don't find them anything like the problem that noisy miners are.
No, they're very aggressive, the noisy miners. Yeah. They just chase everything. Well, but I reckon that makes sense, what you're saying, because where we are in summers, it's very open. You know, it's quite a different environment to where you are, where we're up near the Coolart end. So that's interesting.
Yeah. I heard that on the 3CR Garden Show a couple of weeks ago, that in the absence of just what you were saying, Penny, in the absence of that sort of middle story, that's where, you know, your miners just become the dominant because they've got, I mean, they're very territorial.
And they've got room to dive to and zap, you know, do, which they don't if you've got all those medium story.
Yeah. And where you are, it's a much older subdivision. It's probably from from the 50s.
Right, and the original ones.
The original ones. So so I guess there's a lot more vegetation, whereas we're
It depends on the gardens, though, because a lot of people completely control their gardens and the garden designers come in and you know, they put in all these concrete paths and driveways and
hard surfaces
and, you know, the...
But it's, you know, it's true. I mean, you can plant for planting for wildlife is really great, and it's not just the birds; it's all the insects as well. Yep. So nature strip I've been doing down at Summers, you know, that the insects that come into that is extraordinary now. It's
fantastic,
really amazing, And it wouldn't have been there when it was a lawn. None of them would have been there.
Wonderful. You're listening to the 3CR Garden Show. My name's John Arnott, joined today by Penny Woodward and Evan Gorky. We'd love to invite listeners to jump in on any of the conversations that we're having this morning with a question or a comment. We'd love to hear your garden questions, just general garden questions, if you have any of those for these two fine panellists this morning. The number to call in and chat with the panel with a question or comment is 94190155. And you can also flick through a question on the text line, which is 0488 809 855. And we've actually had a couple of texts come in. Your model of your garden has attracted some interest. Evan, is it possible for Evan to put a photo of the model of your garden onto the 3CR Facebook page?
I may not still have it. No.
Did you take a photograph of it at the time?
Oh, look, it's a long time ago, and it's probably up in the roof somewhere.
See if you can dig it out.
I'll see if I can dig it out.
I was going to ask you if you'd actually picked up your model and taken it outside and compared it to what the garden is now.
No, why I did it was because I didn't want to freak out the neighbours with what I was about to do.
Okay.
So I wanted to show them.
It was a communication tool.
It was. That was exactly what it was.
Excellent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But if I had my time again, I wouldn't do what I've done now, you know, back then. Yeah. I would have done it. It would have been a completely different approach. So, you know, I confess that I reckon I didn't do the right thing back then.
Well, we all did that, though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, but that's all right.
Learn,
that's
your life. Garden.
Yeah.
I think Susie is also keen to see your model garden, and she reckons doing a model garden is much better than doing a model aeroplane. So it has attracted. So your model garden has attracted some interest. another question here of the panel. Just wanted to ask the panel a few good plants for guerrilla gardening. Native or exotic. Set and forget, minimal inputs. Most importantly, low potential for weediness. Someone wants to do a little bit of guerrilla gardening. There's no particular location. But any thoughts on, you know, dropping some plants into the public realm might just survive on their own steam?
I think you have to look at indigenous plants.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yep. No point in doing
it. I'd be going to your local indigenous nursery and having a chat to them.
But the other thing to do is grow from seed.
Yeah.
So, which we can talk about if you like.
Scatter some seed.
So, with the nature strip down at Summers, because the rabbits... are pretty feral.
We've had a terrible time with rabbits.
Is that right?
Oh, okay. Yeah. In a way, they got rid of all the foxes at Coolart.
Right.
What happened?
And the rabbits have just taken over. I'm discovering that rabbits eat things that it never occurred to me that they would eat.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Mm. So I've been doing a lot of trial and error with things, and one of the things to do is plant a lot of things. And
as in mass
plant
identity.
Very densely.
Yeah, that's right. And okay. So the thing is about doing that kind of gardening is that's expensive, even if you're buying tubes. But it's really easy to go and collect seed of things. So when John and I were talking this week, it sort of by text got onto this topic, and I thought, I haven't collected any poa seed yet from home. because I want to put some Poa at summers.
You might need to explain what Poa is.
Oh, sorry. So Poa labilardierii, which is a horrific name. Yeah, which is why it's called Poa lab.
I think it's also called the common tussock grass.
Okay, yep. Common tussock grass is a wonderful, very common grass that you see all around Melbourne in public plantings. It gets about waist high with really nice flower heads. It lasts for years, very long lived.
Yep.
You can cut it back and let it rejuvenate if you want, or you can just really let them go as well. But so we got talking. I thought, oh no, I've missed the window.
Because in my head, seed collecting time for native plants is just after Christmas.
That's right.
In and around Christmas.
Mm.
But not so.
Well, so I went around the property and I'm looking at all the plants and I took the little vacuum cleaner. You know, we have one of those little dustbuster type vacuum cleaners.
Yeah, fabulous.
And I'm going around different, you know, indigenous ones that are around. I couldn't get any seed off. And then I went out the front and there was one plant that was actually spectacular, very upright.
Yeah.
And so the idea with a little vacuum cleaner like a Dustbuster or one of those little Dysons or whatever, which is what we have, a little Dyson thing, it's got a clear rubbish area.
Yeah.
You just run your hand, grab all the flower stalks below the seed heads and then just gently run your hand up the seed head and you hold the vacuum just below. Right? And you just suck all the seed up. So in about 5 minutes, I collected, I don't know, I've got a packet here, which I'll put a photo of.
Yeah, amazing. Off one plant.
Yeah, off one plant. There must be, I don't know, a couple of thousand
seeds. Seeds, absolutely. There.
So it wasn't quite too late. And now to grow, so that makes it really cheap.
It does,
does. If you want to plant, you know, 9 plants a square metre, which I think is probably pretty right.
Yeah, over 15 square metres.
Yeah, it's a lot of plants.
150 plants.
But if you want to plant them dense, that's the way to go. And then they can fight it out amongst themselves. Mm. So the way to plant these things is generally in autumn. I mean, you can correct me, John, because you're more of the plant man, but this is what I do.
Yeah.
So as soon as the weather breaks, really, these can just get spread on top of tubes. Is the best bet.
Perfect.
With a little bit of seed mix on top.
Yep. 2 or 3 seeds per tube.
Yep.
That type of thing.
Oh, you can just scatter them. I mean, I've got thousands. I don't need thousands.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can just scatter them on top. Sure. Bit of vermiculite on top of that. And then just spray them and just regularly spray them.
Yep.
You can, if it's really warm, you can put a bit of plastic over them, plastic bag or something like that.
Yeah.
But you grow your own seeds so readily. That it makes that type of gardening very cheap and quite satisfying. And you can do it with a range of things.
Yeah.
I've, in front of me, I've got a pot with 6 tubes in it.
Yeah.
Because I wanted a coastal manor gum. So I was going around summers and I found a scraggy sort of short coastal manor gum. And so this is 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I put about 10 seeds in my pocket as I walked past, or fruits, took them home, put them in a paper bag, left them on the dining table. After about 5 days, open up the bag and there's seeds in there.
Amazing.
Not many, about 10.
Yeah, okay.
I had got about 10 seeds. Okay. Lots of frass. Yeah. So you've got to be careful. Don't plant. It's really obvious. The seed are really obvious.
Yeah.
They're sort of like a poppy seed, I suppose, a little bit smaller.
Yeah.
And the frass is sort of more a brownie colour. You'll get lots of that. And then just what I was just saying there, just a bit of potting mix, a bit of seed raising mix on top, just drop a few seeds in, a little bit of vermiculite. I'll use perlite here because I didn't have any vermiculite.
Which is interchangeable. Which is
sort of fine.
Yeah.
And it's taken a week and I've got about 10.
You got some germination.
Oh, no, I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 trees coming up.
Wonderful.
So, you know, so I can select one of those. I only need one.
Yeah.
But for guerrilla gardening.
Yes.
Maybe indeed. I could go out and put these somewhere.
Mind you, you probably shouldn't plant them on roundabouts.
No, probably not. So, but going back to the guerrilla gardening thing, this is a way of doing it. So have a look for a good-looking eucalypt. in your area yep. that is hopefully Indigenous.
Yep.
It's a really good time now to be collecting fruit.
And the autumn rains yep. are about to yep. Come along.
And what you're looking for, you're looking for fruit that hasn't opened, but it has a crack line.
Yeah, perfect.
Like a cross in the middle. So just a crack line.
Yep.
They can be actually fairly green still.
Yeah.
And just take them home, put them in a paper bag and see what happens.
Yeah.
And it'll happen quite quickly. And then sow them. And you've got about another month, I would have thought, 2 months to sow them.
Maybe and some, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you'll have trees yeah. you can plant for free wherever you like.
You just take a little fork or something like that, scratch up the surface, make a little seed bed, sow the seed down there.
Yeah, you could just sow it directly if there's rain coming.
Yeah.
You know, time it with looking some at the bureau. Events. And plant them directly.
But you could do it with the poa too.
And you could do it with poa.
Absolutely,
yeah. Yeah. And other grasses.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Which might be better for gorilla gardening.
Is that right?
Well, it just depends where you're doing it because people often do it on sort of, you know, blank corners and, you know, if they're in suburbs and right. places like that. So I think you've got to be a little bit careful about what you're putting there.
What you plant, yeah.
Yeah,
because yeah, otherwise it's a waste of energy, isn't it? Because
well,
if
it
you
is,
plant a
but,
tree and then it gets sawn
but
down.
You also, if it's beside a street, you've got to be careful about sight lines and, you know, those sort of
things. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah. Have you ever gorilla garden?
Like, no.
No?
No.
I have.
Yeah, I have
yeah.
as well.
Yeah, yeah. What was your circumstance?
I'm not gonna say
no. Well, this was probably 30 years ago, so it's the statute of limitations, whatever. When I was at the Melbourne Zoo, we had a huge, great big yellow box of Eucalyptus meliodora, and it was in the way of some development. There was no way the tree could be retained, but it was an Indigenous plant. So it was, you know, one of the last big old yellow boxes in and around Royal Park. So we collected a whole bunch of seed, grew a whole bunch of seedlings, offered the yellow box seedlings to the City of Melbourne that was parked, and we planted about 150 odd yellow boxes into Royal Park, plus the 80 or 90 that I managed to sneak in at the same time. So we did a little bit of gorilla garden. Because it was an Indigenous plant. You know, it was the most remarkable tree we grew up. We had some excess plants. What else were we going to do with them?
Yeah, that's right. You end up throwing them out.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is insane.
Now some of those yellow box in Royal Park are actually trees.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah.
And there's more of them.
And there's more of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's more of them.
Which is great for the birds. And it's a long-term thing because if you're going to have nesting hollows for things like kookaburras, You need to be planting a tree today.
And trees are long-term propositions.
Yeah, because it takes a long time.
When you were talking about ginkgos before, it's one of the things I love about ginkgos is that they're known as the grandfather tree because grandfathers plant them for their grandchildren because they don't get to full height until those children are adults or grandfathers themselves.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Which I think is just such a nice story.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
We were in Japan last year and we're driving around. We were in a camper van driving around and all of a sudden I realised, oh, no, I haven't looked up where the biggest ginkgos are in Japan. And I looked it up, no joke, it was 20 k's away.
Oh, perfect.
So we drove down. This tree was over 1,000 years old.
Oh, wow.
And it's actually... You know huge banyan pine, banyan figs?
Yeah.
You know, they can just be enormous. That's what it was like.
You're kidding.
No, multiple trunks because they send down
aerial roots. Yeah.
And so there's no sort of distinctive trunk. There's sort of just lots of trunks, but 40, 50 metres across.
Amazing.
And probably 30 metres tall, but just this massive round tree. And we saw another one as well. Just enormous trees and over 1,000 years old. Look what that's seen, that tree.
Oh, incredible.
It's incredible.
Didn't happen to be in autumn, did it?
No, well, we were there in autumn, but no, they're late.
They're late.
So, too late. But we did see amazing autumn colour up in high country.
Sure.
Like just blow your mind.
Yeah.
Colour.
In Australia, we think the Geelong Botanic Gardens is bigger, and it is in the Australian context, but, yeah, it's a baby compared to...
It's a baby.
It's a mere 175 years old.
Yeah. Needs another 800
Yes,
to indeed. Be something.
Yeah. we're changing gears here just a little bit. And we are going to have a chat with Kylie Soans, who is an urban ecologist and conservation biologist. Kylie's been sort of project managing, leading up a program with the City of Melbourne to come up with a floral emblem for the City of Melbourne. And the announcement of the winner was made last week. Are you there, Kylie?
I'm here. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for chatting to the panel this morning, Kylie. You're on the call with Penny Woodward and Evan Gorky.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
So the people have spoken and Melbourne now has a new floral emblem. What is it, Kylie?
It is the Swamp Everlasting, and I am so stoked that people went for something with swamp in its name. it just gives me faith that the people of Melbourne know where it's at, because you know Melbourne was built on wetlands.
On swampy country.
We are getting back to our very damp roots and celebrating a flower that likes exactly that, and I couldn't be more proud.
And being an everlasting, it's got that typical yellow, sort of yellow bracty everlasting flower structure.
Yeah, look, it's an incredible flower to have as a floral emblem because of just how it holds its colour. You know, it's one of those really great flowers that it looks wonderful cut, but you can save those flower heads. I've been doing it since I was a kid, collecting, you know, we called them paper daisies.
Paper daisies.
And, yeah. You know, you keep them and they decorate your house, and I have a bowl full of random paper daisy heads. and it just, you know, even through this whole process, it reminded me how we interact with flowers, how we use them in our daily life. You know, we save them, we print them on our tea towels, we give them to people that we love. You know, we like to fill our world with flowers, and this is a really great one to be able to do that with.
And there was quite a process coming up with the short list, you know, and that went back to, did that go back to old herbarium records? How was the list determined, Kylie?
It did, yeah. Look, it was a really fun process to be part of, and it started with what was called a pre-colonial plant list developed by some researchers at the Arthur Ryler Institute in Melbourne for the City of Melbourne, and they wanted to come up with a list of what were the plants in Melbourne before colonisation? What did that list look like? And it was more than 700 plants.
Wow.
And then we had to whittle that down to things that the City of Melbourne wanted in a floral emblem. They wanted a plant that everybody could enjoy and could physically plant. And that meant something that could be grown in a pot on a balcony, because that's, you know, for most people across Melbourne's municipality, that's the space they've got to work with.
Sure.
So we sort of ruled out trees and great big shrubs and aquatic plants and orchids that might have very specialised requirements, and got down to a list of 34 species to choose from. And okay. Then we put some experts in a room and made them duke it out.
And a couple of those experts were, you had some 3CR people on that panel. Was it Emmeline Bowman, Russell Lark?
We did. It was a really great room. You know, we had people from the Royal Botanic Gardens. We had experts in social science and botany and ecology and horticulture. And we had First Nations representatives. And so we got to really get this really nice holistic look at what could a floral emblem look like. But even better than that, what should the shortlist look like? You know, what kind of bouquet were we going to offer to Melbourne and ask them to choose from? And that was a great way to introduce the people of Melbourne to 9 really wonderful finalists.
Can you recall?
And something that I liked.
Sorry.
I can. Sorry, there was the golden billy button, there was the tall bluebell, which I am surprised. I really thought that was going to be a runaway winner. There were chocolate lilies, purple coral pea, the yam daisy, kangaroo grass, the rounded noon flower, and austral stork's bill, which was my personal favourite that came in absolute last, but never mind.
great plan, though.
It was in terms of a social media campaign or a campaign. I mean, this attracted a huge amount of interest. Like, my understanding is that there were tens of thousands of votes. Is that right, Kylie?
Yeah, more than 25,000 votes were cast, and Melbourne have said it has been their most successful public engagement campaign ever.
Oh, you beauty. And it was a wildflower.
Absolutely. You know, a critically endangered species has been voted in. And I've been researching critically endangered species and endangered species in cities for more than 10 years. So I've known that the swamp everlasting was a, you know, endangered species that could be found in Melbourne. And if I had gone to any council 10 years ago and said, this is a critically endangered species, you must save it, here is the data, it wouldn't have happened. But this way, people have decided for themselves. They've fallen in love with the story. They've seen the opportunity. They love the flower, and that is so much more powerful in getting this action. You know, this plant is going to be planted across the city, in gardens, in rain gardens. It's going to be given to people at citizenship ceremonies. It's incredible the change that this will make.
Extraordinary. And I know the Royal Botanic Gardens Victoria were doing some work with schools on the swamp everlasting, and, you know, it is... well, it's considered to be critically endangered in the wild. So there's opportunities for not only the City of Melbourne, but the City of Melbourne residents to be doing that sort of conservation through cultivation thing, which is kind of amazing.
It's so incredible. It's part of the Raising Rarity program that the Royal Botanic Gardens run. Their work with schools has been fantastic. You know, school students are growing them in plots in their schoolyards and harvesting seeds and sending that seed off to the herbarium to be catalogued and saved elsewhere. And it can be part of what they call living collections. So rather than only conserving the plant in herbaria or in botanic gardens, we can set that up as plant plots throughout the city that are genuinely contributing to our science and understanding and conservation of a critically endangered species.
It's fantastic. I'm imagining that people are champing at the bit to actually get one and put it into their garden or on their balcony. Is it commercially available just yet, Kylie, or is there
a little bit of... I believe you can get it through some Indigenous nurseries, like the Billy Nursery, the Westgate Biodiversity.
Terrific.
Have an Indigenous nursery there, but I think it's something that is going to ramp up now. Everyone's got their eyes on how can we get this seed out to people, how can we help them understand and learn how to grow it, but they've already fallen in love with it, so that is half the battle.
And you've already mentioned how the floral emblem will be used. Could you just touch on that again? But, you know, how will that be represented in the public realm?
So the City of Melbourne are going to use this in garden plantings. So anywhere that they can include this, there will be patches. It will be grown out the front of Town Hall when it's in flower. So there'll be planter boxes out on Collins Street and in Swanston Street there, sort of showcasing the flower. It's going to be given at citizenship ceremony, so people will get their own packet of seed that they can take home. And of course, there has to be merch. I mean, it's such a beautiful flower. I would, you know, love to have, you know, paper daisies on lapel pins and, you know, T-shirts and hats. I mean, it's such a beautiful plant. And people have been chanting "Go Swampy" in the comments, which I think is marvellous. So you've got to get that on a T-shirt, I reckon.
Yeah, amazing. Kylie, congratulations on such a successful campaign. Hats off to the City of Melbourne for, you know, the idea of having a floral emblem in the first place. And thanks for thanks for calling in today and chatting with the panel about it. It's a cracking project. Go Swampy.
Go Swampy. Have a good one.
Good on you. Thanks very much, Kylie.
I was listening to it being announced on ABC Radio a couple of days ago, and the broadcaster obviously knew nothing about plants, and she's made the comment of, couldn't you have chosen something with a better name? And I just thought,
well, swamp, the word swamp has been given a bad name.
I don't mind swamp. No, I think, and calling it swampy, I think, is fantastic. Yeah. And I'm pretty proud of Melburnians that's what we voted for.
And
so,
at 25,000 votes.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
The most successful campaign for the City of Melbourne ever. Mm.
Yeah.
It's a wildflower.
Yeah. Mm. So I think the cool thing about that, something I wanted to talk about today, which is a rabbit-proof plant, in my opinion, is a very closely related plant to this, which is Xerocrysum viscosum.
Yeah, lovely thing, the sticky everlasting.
The sticky everlasting. Now, I grow that from seed regularly. So if you bought one of these and put it in a pot, this time of year, you can collect billions of seeds.
Yeah, sure.
And I just had a look on Vic Flora, and, you know, the seed head is very similar. They look like little shuttlecocks, like badminton
shuttlecocks.
Yeah, tiny ones. But you get thousands of them.
You get thousands.
Yeah, and they're really easy to collect because I've been growing some different ones, and they're brilliant.
Yeah.
They're great plants.
Yeah, it's so easy to grow, and you can just scatter them across a seed tray, and again, a bit of vermiculite over the top of them. Keep them sprayed, or do you put them in something?
I just shoved mine in pots and they grew.
quite forgiving.
Yes. And these will be the same.
That
they'll be so easy to grow. So that's a really wonderful thing to have as an attribute for a floral emblem that people can really easily engage with it.
And cultivate it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing about the swamp everlasting is it creeps along the ground, so it's a ground cover, and you can actually divide it up, and you can actually divide it like you would a herbaceous perennial.
Being a swamp everlasting, do they need extra water?
They require in nature they grow in sort of drainage lines with that sort of seasonal inundation. Yeah. So in the middle of winter they might actually be aquatic, or emergent aquatics. But in the middle of summer,
so the edge of a pond or something like that would be.
They're one of those sort of almost resurrection plants that you know how kaikuyu lawns go off. And then with the first little bit of rain, they green up again. It's a little bit similar with the swamp everlasting. It'll persist in dryness, but thrive in when there's moisture around.
So they'll be quite good in pots, in like self-watering pots, type of thing. I would have thought that you're going to be able to keep a fair bit of moisture up to. But it might be a little bit harder to grow in gardens. I don't know, unless you had a really moist area. Is that right?
No, it's a garden plant. It'll appreciate extra moisture, for sure.
But it will soldier on.
Yeah, it'll soldier on, but it'll perform its best when it's moist.
Yeah. So when I was doing a little bit of reading about some of the successful plants in the nature strip at Summers that have sort of beaten the rabbits, one of the reasons I think Xerocrysum viscosum is so good is because it is sticky.
Yeah.
The leaves are sticky, and I don't think the rabbits really like it.
Like it's not palatable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And another plant that has been really good, which I've only planted a couple of, is Chrysocephalum semipaposum.
Yeah, the clustered everlasting.
And so I was reading in Roger's Bible encyclopedia yesterday, and the young growth is sticky.
Which
I didn't realise.
Yeah, gotcha.
And maybe that's why it's been successful, because the straight apiculatum, the rabbits just mow
it down.
It survives, but they mow it off.
Yeah.
Whereas semipoposum is a much taller plant as well.
Sure.
And it's absolutely thrived. So that's really interesting. So they don't really like sticky.
Maybe
the ones I've got.
Yes.
The rabbits I've got. Don't like that sort of stickiness.
Sticky nature, yeah.
Yeah.
You're listening to the 3CR Garden Show. My name's John Arnott, joined today by Penny Woodward and Evan Gorky. Feel free to call a question or a comment into the panel on 94190155. You can also text a question through to this morning's panel on 0488 809 855. And we've actually had a couple of text messages come through. A fact check or a sense check. The Garlic Festival, there's a question whether the Garlic Festival is at Corumburra Showgrounds or at Coonwarra.
Oh, sorry, Coonwarra.
Coonwarra.
Yeah.
So definitely Coonwarra.
Coonwarra.
Okay.
Yes. Did I get
that? No, you said that.
No, you did say that.
It was just last year, I think it was at Coonwarra.
Oh, maybe it was at Coonwarra last year.
Was it? Yeah, last year it was at Coonwarra. That's where we
went. Well, no, I'm sorry. It's at the same place. So, right. So, Coonwarra, it's me.
Coonwarra.
Sorry. Yes, absolutely. No, I'm right. I did write it down. It's Coonwarra.
Hang on. We might just do a quick Google check.
Yeah, but I'm
Coonwarra. Coonwarra it is. Garlic Festival. Oh, sorry, the other way around.
Yeah, the other way around.
It is at Coronborough.
If it's at the same place as last year, it's Coronborough.
It's the same place as last year.
Coronborough Showgrounds, Saturday the 28th, not Coonwarra.
Okay, my apologies.
That's okay, no problems at all.
But stop in at Coonwarra through.
It is absolutely on the way through.
And it's fabulous.
And it's on the same rail trail.
Yeah. In fact, you could park there and ride your bike.
You could. Frank from Noble Park would like to know the correct time to be planting sunflowers, and what is the phenomenon that makes them face the sun?
well, they're, what's the word, phototropic.
Phototropic.
So they follow the sun.
That's the phenomenon.
Yes. Yeah.
And the right time, the best time to plant sunflowers?
I would have said spring.
Yep. As, yeah, because it's they a summer time. Annual.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. And then if they're not, and then if you're collecting the seed, the moment a mouse gets in there and has a bit of a go, collect them.
Oh, because okay.
They because clean them up.
It's all over.
Yeah. Absolutely no time.
And if you've got cockatoos and corellas around, they will also clean them up. So, you might need to protect.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a question here. It hasn't got a name, but it's what's the best way to care for tree ferns after they have been recently planted? So I'm assuming that they're Dicksonias. Let's assume Dicksonias.
Mm. Water.
Just water?
Keep the water up to them, I would say.
Aspect?
As they grow naturally in shady areas.
Yep.
So you need them to not, you know, a little bit of dilute sunlight is important, but, you know, not to be right out in the open and particularly not getting the late afternoon sun.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. The south side of the house seems like the cool side, but in the heat of summer, of course, the sun goes around that late sun.
Late western,
Hits the south side of houses. Yeah. So I actually think you're better off putting those sorts of things on the eastern side.
Yeah,
sure.
Or where they're going to get that shade from a tree or something from that late western, which is a cooker.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. The Dicksonias, their trunk is actually their root system as well. So I think wetting down the trunk is often a really good idea in the first instance and the way establish some adventitious roots into the soil.
You can just hook a hose, the end of a hose, into the fronds at the top and just let it dribble into the top is quite a good way to water them.
Terrific. Carlos from Croydon, not a question but a comment, loving the show, guys, really enjoyed the list of tips for better environment and go swampy. Swampy has another fan and a comment here that Merrill Johnson's Seedscape website, there are categories of seeds for species that deter rabbits and deer. So it's worth a look. So there must Merrill's website there must be a deer and rabbit tolerant species list. So thanks, Susie, for that.
Can I just go back to the garlic festival again for messing it up.
That's okay.
South Gippsland Garlic Festival.au is the website. And that's where you will find all the information that you need.
Corumburra Showgrounds.
Yes.
And Penny, you're going to be talking.
Yes.
What are you going to be talking about? Could you give us a pricey?
I'm talking about garlic, really all identifying the different groups and cultivars that are available, but how to plant and grow mainly for the home gardener.
Okay.
There's also a couple of experienced garlic growers talking straight after me who are also looking at home gardening with different garlics. So mine is a broader coverage with lots of really good photos.
Your book was published how long ago?
My very first edition, which was Garlic and Friends, was published in the 80s.
Is that right?
And the recent edition was published in the early 2000s.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And so it's nearly to the end of that available book run?
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't actually going to say this today because I don't really want people ordering them before I take them to the garlic festival.
Go to the festival, speak to
come and ask questions. Because there's always lots of questions about garlic.
It's a great book, though. I have my dad's copy.
Which one?
From the first garlic festival. So,
oh, okay. Right.
The 2000s, I suppose. I think it says something like, happy garlicky.
With very, very best garlicky wishes.
That's what it says. I usually say. To John. So I should bring that in and get it updated I own it.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Oils aren't oils. Garlics aren't garlics.
There's 300 different garlics in Australia.
Cultivars.
Yep. And 10 or 11 groups.
So it's all it's all the same genus species thing.
Yeah.
So what is that, Allium sativum?
Yeah.
And sativum means cultivated, is that right?
Yeah, it usually does.
Wow, have a look at this. So Penny's just opened up a pictorial catalogue of, it's 20 or 30 or 40 garlics
well,
there.
Well, no, it shows the different groups.
Okay.
So it's one of the things that we worked really hard at when I was on the Garlic Industry Association board.
Okay.
Was bringing together these, working out where the garlics sat.
Okay.
And these are all the different groups. And there is a version of this actually up on, not specifically this thing that I'm holding up, because this comes from Tasmanian Gourmet Garlic.
Okay.
If you search for them, you can buy one of these.
That's
but
beautiful.
Yeah, it's great.
It is beautifully done. Mm. But it is... We have garlics, we have turbans, which are the striped ones, we have, these are the group names, which is probably what you have yes. here.
I bought a turban at the festival last year, and I thought I'd bring it in to make sure that is that what it is.
I'm very surprised it hasn't sprouted. That's the only thing that has me a little bit worried, because turbans usually only store for 4 or 5 months.
Oh, right.
So that should have been putting up sprouts by now. But,
I've mixed them up again.
The Creoles have lovely white skins and bright pink and purple cloves. And you have a whole, and they're the ones that you often find in Spain, for instance. But you can't bring garlic into Australia because of disease problems.
Okay.
Although it is brought in commercially, but it's all sprayed to stop the fungal diseases that can come with garlic.
Okay.
So you need to buy your garlic locally.
Yep.
And you can only grow it from cloves. So, so this is these are the different groups. Subtropicals grow better in short day, warmer climates.
Okay.
Turbans, short storage, but lovely big bulbs and cloves. Artichokes are the standard garlics that we've had for many, many years that don't grow scapes. So that's the stem that comes up. Creoles are the ones I've just mentioned. Silver skins are another one that doesn't grow scapes, and they have coloured cloves, so they're related to creoles but without the scapes.
Okay.
Asiatics are a bit like turbans with bigger cloves. There's not many of those around. And then on the other side, you've got the glazed purple stripe and the marbled purple stripe.
Amazing.
And the standard purple stripe. So we had, I've just done the garlic judging as well, where we had 37 different garlics to try, and those results will be announced in the next week or so. But some of the marbled purple stripes were some of the biggest garlics that I've ever seen.
Really?
They were huge.
Wow.
But they also have huge cloves.
Right.
But they're colder. They do better in colder climates.
Right. So Tassie and...
Yeah. But also high country.
Yeah.
I mean, I've grown them, but they don't get that big. Then you've got porcelains and rocamboles and elephant garlic, which actually isn't garlic. It's a leek.
Okay.
But it has a beautiful flower.
It has a fabulous flower, and it's a great plant to have in the garden for attracting beneficial insects. Mm. And you can eat the leaves, and you can eat the cloves and bulbs, but I just find them a bit sort of vegetative.
Yes. I've got them in the garden just for flowers.
Yeah, okay.
And they're fabulous because their flower stalks are about, I don't know, 1,500 high.
Yeah, or more.
Yeah.
And they're big. The flowers are that size.
How extraordinary.
And like when they're in flower, you just have thousands of insects, hoverflies and all sorts of things coming to visit the flowers. Mm.
Aside from going to the garlic festival at Corumburra.
Yeah.
We're not that far off garlic planting season.
Yeah.
Is that autumn? Is that generally right? Or?
Yeah. You don't plant really before March.
Okay.
And that would only be turbans, April, May is the best planting time for most garlics.
Okay.
But now's a really good time to start preparing your ground.
Absolutely, to get your soil prepared.
That's why it's such a busy time now.
Sure.
As soon as the weather breaks, your soil gets a little bit of moisture, and it's a great time to start bringing in some manures and things like that, because garlic likes that, don't it?
It likes it, but it needs to be well rotted. So you don't want to put garlic in with fresh manure because you'll get rot.
You know, I've done that.
Yeah.
And I can confirm it doesn't work.
Right. Okay.
So you need to
be one year
putting it in You need to be putting it in now and planting them in May. So
yeah,
it'll take a couple of months to break down.
If you've got access to horse manure or anything, now's the time.
Right.
Now's the time to start that work.
Okay.
And so, for all your veggies, really. So, I mean, to me, the peak veggie growing time really is starting soon and ends up at Christmas.
Yeah.
And then I kind of stop. Because you can grow such a variety of things in that period.
Yeah.
So, yeah, start your soil prep now.
Fantastic. So
anyone else who's looking for garlic?
Yes. I was going to say, if you're not going to the festival, where do you suggest people buy?
The marketplace on the Australian Garlic Industry Association website, which is garlicaustralia.asn.au.
Okay. GarlicAustralia.asn.au. Okay.
And all the small farmers, small garlic growers who are part of the organisation have their sites. You can link, you can see where they are, and you can actually go to their sites to buy garlic.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Wonderful. So it's well worth having
a
look.
So that's
a mail online service.
Yeah, fabulous. Yeah.
But it's the garlic show is fabulous because there is this cooking shed as well where they talk about all this sort of different ways to cook garlic and how to use it. And that's really fantastic. We learned a lot from there. But and there was black garlic.
Black garlic is fermented garlic.
It's extraordinary. We bought some.
Well, it's actually slow-cooked garlic, I should say.
And it is the most amazing thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's a cooking game changer.
I cook black garlic in my rice cooker.
Yeah.
And you put your whole bulbs in and you set it on keep warm. There for about 20 days.
Oh.
You've got to block up the steam holes.
Yeah.
And the whole thing, the garlic turns black. And obviously you can't grow it or do anything, but what you then do is store it in the fridge. But it's a cross between, the flavour is a really umami flavour, and for me it's a cross between balsamic vinegar and Vegemite.
Oh, my Lord.
So it is extraordinary.
It's an extraordinary flavour. Yeah. Not a really strong garlic flavour. Mm. There's a real sweetness
to it. There's a softness to it.
So it's well worth having doing that if you've got time.
And that's why you go to the show.
Yeah.
Because there's all these great tips and you can talk to growers. And if you want a particular type of garlic, though, go straight to the garlic growers when you get there because they all sell out.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. There's a couple of questions have come up on the text. I'll comment on sunflowers. When young sunflowers will track the sun east to west, heliotropism is the term that this texter has added to that. And when they are mature, they'll typically only face east to capture the morning sun. Once they're mature, they don't do that heliotropism.
I love our audience. They're so
fabulous.
Yeah, it's great.
David in Upway has just finished reading Penny and Karen's tomato book. It was amazing with an exclamation mark, so you have a fan there. Any advice on Alchemilla xanthochlora? It's an antique perennial, said it was full sun thing. So anyone know Alchemilla xanthochlora?
Well, we used to grow Alchemilla in gardens in my early days.
Yeah.
It's a very soft plant.
It's a herbaceous perennial.
Yeah, it is. I wouldn't have thought for our climate it would be one I'd be planting.
A little bit too hot here?
In my view, in a small garden, if you're really looking after
it. The Alchemillas are a very classic English garden plants. And they're beautiful and they're worth having a go at, but you'll need to put them in a cooler part of your garden.
Yeah. And plenty of water. Yeah. So, David, I think it's try and find a sort of a semi-shaded,
aspect. We'll have microclimates in our gardens where some of those things will do.
And Upway, you're going to have shade.
He's going to have some shade, Upway. Just again, a comment on people loving the guerrilla gardening stuff, which is very naughty of us here at 3CR. Well, it is called Radical Radio, so true to form.
Yeah, exactly.
The first of the ABC Gardening Australia shows highlighted Coolart Homestead. And, well, Penny, you're very close to Coolart, and you're a friend of Coolart.
Yeah, I'm a friend of Coolart.
A recently joined up member?
Yes. Yeah, now that I'm spending more time at home, I'm sort of looking for things to do within my within my own community. So I've been spending some time at Coolant. But one of the things I loved about the Gardening Australia segment, and it's right at the beginning of the first episode, were the aerial shots, because I don't think I'd ever seen a drone view
of Coolant.
And Coolant is this amazing old building, but it is surrounded by extraordinary wetlands.
Yeah.
So Graham Pizzi lived there for many years in looking after the wetlands. It belongs now to Parks Victoria. It was sold to them in 1977, I think. The old house, which features on the Gardening Australia show, was built in 1898 by the Grimwades.
Yeah, right.
But the people who set up the wetlands are a family known as the Luxtons.
The Luxtons, yeah, that's right.
And they did just such an amazing job. The problem with going at the moment is that it's the driest year there for 18 years.
Sure.
There's no water.
No water. It's all in the
almost
water.
Almost no water. So there's one large puddle where the lake usually is.
Well, that's ebb and flow at its extreme.
Absolutely.
Isn't it? Yeah.
So, but look, it is still beautiful. The gardens are beautiful. There's a group of friends who look after the wider gardens. There's some fabulous old trees, including a ginkgo.
Yeah. And a magnificent juniper.
Yes, fabulous juniper.
Yeah.
And there's also this community garden, which is what the gardening show was about.
Yeah.
So, and they're all run by different groups of friends, and it is it's well worth a visit. But it's I don't know how you feel about it, Evan, but it's a hidden gem.
It is.
There are so many people who arrive, and particularly after Gardening Australia.
Yeah, sure.
We had all these people turning up saying, oh, we didn't even know this existed, So it's not far from Melbourne, so it's well worth visiting. But at the moment the house is open only 2 days a week, so Wednesdays and Saturdays from 11 till 3. But the grounds are open all the time. Mm. So you can, a lot of the locals know about the back gate and we come in the back gate, but the grounds are open from 9 until 5. So, and families come and set up picnics and, it's just such
it's a
nice
treat,
space.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's not just the gardens around the old house. It's also the wider indigenous
the walks. Yes, exactly.
Areas that end up out on the beach.
Yeah.
So we were walking through there a couple of weekends ago, and there was a couple. They were English, and they lived over in Rye, and they brought their friends over because it's the walk they always do.
Yeah,
and they were doing one of the loops
big
around
circle.
Looking
nice.
For birds.
Nice.
And and you'll see a lot of interesting birds. In
you
there.
Will.
You'll see the musk lorikeets. And as you go down onto the beach, you'll if you're lucky enough, you'll see hooded plovers. Little birds that zip around on the sand, you have to be patient because they're very hard to see.
Yeah.
And if you see little babies, they sit between the legs of the adults, and these are tiny birds.
It doesn't get much cuter than a baby hooded plover.
It really doesn't. And there's also red-capped plovers that can be there as well.
And migratory birds that come in from Siberia.
Yeah.
So
that's what you're not seeing so much of at the moment.
Because
unfortunately,
of the
conditions. But if we get this really heavy rain, then we may
change things.
Can I just say very quickly, no dogs are allowed.
Okay.
In there,
okay,
or in the car park, or left in the cars. Apparently, there's a website at the moment that tells you that you can bring
dogs.
It's
a dog walking site, but it's not.
But it's absolutely not.
Okay.
No dogs.
Yep.
No dogs, and obviously no cats.
Yep.
But no dogs.
And that's because of the wildlife.
Yeah.
Inherent wildlife values
yes.
of the, place. Yeah.
So you'll see wallabies in there as well.
Yes.
You'll see koalas if
you're
lucky.
See
We've seen koalas in there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Kookaburras sticking their heads out of nesting holes in old trees.
I saw a pair of pardalotes the other day.
Yes, yeah.
And they're gorgeous birds.
Yeah, they're gorgeous birds, yeah. You see pardalotes regularly as well.
And pardalotes, they nest
they
in mud walls.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, you'll sometimes see them also on some of the walks to the beach where the sand has sort of ground away the ground, you know, and it's a little tunnel of sand, and you'll see little holes, and sometimes they'll be sitting above you just giving you what for, you know, as you go past. They'll be carrying on, and then if you look around, you will see a little tunnel.
Yes.
And that's where they'll be. We've had a few pardalotes opposite our place in Upper Beak in the area there where we walk a lot, and if through the spring, if you walk past, you hear the little birds, or if you see a pardalote go to the ground,
they move.
You then go and have a look, and you will see them, and you can hear the chicks in there, but very susceptible to cats. So this is why cats should not be out.
Should not be out.
Never.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Because so susceptible. Oh, yeah.
And the Luscombs, I mean, that was years ahead of their time in terms of...
Yes. Yeah, the caring about nature.
Yeah, yes. Caring about nature. So yeah, it's multi-layered. There's the heritage homestead. There's the native and exotic garden. There's the wetlands.
The little shop.
The sanctuary.
There's this the whole sanctuary. There's also a little shop in the old manager's quarters that is open every day between 11 and 3.
Yeah.
So you can come in and say good day, and that's what I've been doing. And I'm trying to build up a collection of secondhand gardening and nature books to have in that shop, so that because we have all these interested people coming in, and we've got new books and some really beautiful stock in there and some other things that reflect the house. But what we're trying to do is save up enough money to have a basic amount of money to repair the house, because at the moment you can only go into the ground floor because of the damage and the leaks upstairs.
So I think in that shop too, you're growing indigenous plants?
Yes, there's some really good indigenous plants.
If you want a plant to grow that's going to be tasty to koalas, that's the place to go.
Yeah, and we have an honesty box. So if the shop's closed, you can pay for it by putting your money in the honesty box.
How lovely. I had heard as well that any excess produce coming out of the produce garden.
Community garden.
Goes to...
In Hastings.
Community group in Hastings.
Yes, absolutely, which is fantastic. So it's just a lovely centre of all sorts of people doing lots of different things, all like-minded people. Mm. So,
Peter and Vicky from Notting Hill have just mentioned that they were at Cool Art recently.
Yeah.
And they're pointing listeners to some YouTube videos of Cool Art. So I guess if you go to the Parks Victoria website, there's some really nice footage of
what you can see.
But one of our neighbours at Summers, during COVID, she got into photography and she produced a book.
Oh, really?
Of all the birds.
Yeah.
And the wetlands at that point were very full.
Yeah.
And she's got these extraordinary photographs of like a currawong coming in and stealing an ibis egg, and it has it in its mouth, and, you know, and all the different ducks that are there.
The ducks are extraordinary.
It's just unreal. So, and photographs of all of them. So we bought one off her because it's just a wonderful little guide to the birds.
I haven't seen that one. It's still available?
Well, she just made it for herself, so maybe I'll ask her to you know, see if she wants to sell, because it is a great reference book.
Yeah, it'd be fantastic. Mm.
Yeah. Cool Art Homestead, a bit of a hidden treasure down on the Mornington Peninsula. And it's located in Summers?
Yeah, it's on the edge of Summers.
On the edge of Summers.
Yeah.
Lord Summers Road.
Lord Summers Road.
Yes. Mm.
Terrific. I did my work experience at Cool Art and planted a whole bunch of manigums.
Oh, really?
Yes, indeed.
Oh,
so maybe some of the trees that the koalas are feasting on now might have been things that were planted 45 years ago. Who knows?
Yeah. Well done. Very likely.
Yes.
It's a lovely spot.
Yeah.
Folks, you've been listening to the 3CR Garden show. We should start the wind-up. Thanks for tuning in. Hopefully today's been interesting and informative. I would really like to thank our two panellists this morning. Penny Woodward, thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. It's been lovely to be back.
Lovely information about Cool Art and garlic and the Corranburra show. and Evan, thanks for coming in again, mate.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I love coming in. It's good fun.
It's wonderful to hear... your nature trip sounds fantastic, and some really hot tips with respect to you know, not having to purchase the tube stock if you want to actually do a verge garden or a nature strip garden.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have a crack and do it yourself. Yeah. Stick it in tubes.
Yeah.
Terrific. I'd like to thank Kylie Soans and swampy. I think that is just the most lovely thing. 25,000 people voted for a plant in the city of Melbourne. It's just wonderful. Big thanks to Jacob and Labana for producing this morning's show. Tune in next week for another 3CR Garden show. Stick around for the alternative news. Happy late summer gardening, folks, and we'll catch you soon.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.